Hey, this is Michael Harlan Turkell, and you are listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. That's heritageradionetwork.com. Check it out for shows, archives, and live calendar. And you can call us live at 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. You can also find our podcast in iTunes there. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable as the nature as the surrounding landscape. For more info, go to HearstRanch.com. Well, we're going to jump on into it. We got two awesome food photographers in general, people in general, Marcus Nilsson and Gabrielle Stabile. And we're going to talk a little about food photography. They were outside buddying up. They're best of friends now, realizing that they shoot for a lot of the same clients. And they were just going down the list, say, you shoot this? Yeah. Do you shoot this? Yeah. You shoot this? Yeah. So they're pretty much doppelgangers, even though they look nothing
it's
alike.
It's unfair for him because he shot much more than I did. So
you're catching up. Catching up. Sometimes it's not about quantity; it's about quality.
Exactly. Let me say that I'm honored to be sitting here with you guys and Marcus, which is a legend in the environment. And seriously, yeah, it's right.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to have such high caliber, photographers in the house. So we are going to talk a little bit about the profession of food photography. Gabrielle has shot Momofuku's cookbook and an upcoming Milk Bar cookbook, I've heard.
Yeah. We're working on that. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. And Marcus actually used to cook at Aquavit prior to getting into photography.
Yeah.
And has since shot for clients such as Gourmet, a couple meat based cookbooks. What are they? Pig and Good Meat?
Good Meat's coming out in end of the summer, I believe. And
ham.
Ham.
I know it was something pork related.
An obsession with the hindquarters.
Yeah.
That's what it's called. Yeah.
So I'm assuming you're not a vegetarian.
Absolutely not. And we just did one on goat, actually.
Oh, excellent.
Goat.
All from what publisher? It's Stuart Tabori?
Yeah.
Excellent.
All the same publisher.
So, yeah, if you need to know about anything protein-wise, you go to Marcus over here. Though Gabrielle is not shy about dealing with bacon and ham himself from shooting the Momofuku cookbook. How did you originally get hooked up with Chef David Chang?
The guys at Gourmet that I worked for since I graduated from the ICP, they were, friends with Dave, and they knew that Dave was looking for a photographer, and right about that time, I'm a little bit ashamed to say because I'm new to the environment of the. I mean, I moved to New York like 4 years ago, so I barely knew Momofuku. I'd never
one of the very few that.
I wasn't really aware.
Momo what?
But I had like this. I was a subscriber of the New Yorker magazine, and a profile on Dave came out.
Marcus, did you shoot that?
David Chang?
Yeah.
I did shoot him for Gourmet.
Yeah, he shot him in Gourmet.
For your work.
That one I didn't shoot.
No, that thing was Platon. He did that portrait. The photo wasn't... oh my God, I'm saying that Platon took a crappy photo. But the photo wasn't
Don't
great.
Worry,
but
he's not here today.
No, it's great, but that photo wasn't particular. I mean, because I know Dave, and I didn't see much of Dave retrospectively, in him, but in that photo. But, long story short, they just, Gourmet sent me to do this story on a halal slaughterhouse, and I had to, like, kneel on goat's piece in blood for 6 hours or so, and the photos came out pretty gory, so they decided not to run it. And but somehow the contact sheets, like, were shipped to Dave and Peter. Peter is the writer of the book.
Yeah,
and
Peter
also
Meehan.
Peter Meehan, yeah. Has also been an amazing project manager for the whole thing. And they liked it. I think, like, they were very, very brave because I didn't have much experience on, shooting, like, still lives and stuff like that, except a bunch of stuff that I had done for Gourmet or for the Times. But, not that kind of, like, thoughtful and prepared and set up.
So from like the guts of the stuff to more glorified meat, Marcus, are a lot of your images set up studio or are they kind of on location?
It's a mix of both. It's a lot of studio. lot of studio, but we do a lot of locations as well, being diners and butchers and kitchens.
And like the recent stuff, Marcus just won an award for AP26, that's American Photography 26, and PDN award for same spread about, what was it, Late Night Eats in New York?
Yeah, the best late night eats in America.
So in America.
It was for Details magazine, and we traveled around Chicago, LA, New York, several cities, and photographed late night eats places. Yeah. That spread that's in PDN, that's Katz's Deli in the middle of the night. So it's on location.
Yeah. So I think it's a very similar approach and style that you guys have with this darkness, this grittiness, this truth in food and the subject that you are photographing, more so than, you know, the old ideal of soft focus front, blown out background, commercial setup, food, everything sprayed down, hosed down, wiped down, made to look absolutely pristine. There is truth in advertising or in cookbooks.
I don't know. It's a one of the things that I found really exciting about working on a cookbook was that the food stylist was Mark Eibold, and I knew that he was kind of, you know,
is Mark Eibold the former bassist of Pavement?
Yeah, it's the actual the Pavement got back together.
Oh, excellent! So
now he's playing with them.
Former somewhere like in the world.
Yeah, now he's a rock star again. But
before, I remember he used to work at Great Jones Cafe.
I think he still does that.
And he's the bass player in Sonic Youth.
So he's got like this. He's probably my myth. You know, I'd have to say the same about me. it's just amazing, and he's the most like down to earth and easy guy to deal with. I mean, he's very. I never like saw him like putting, you know, weird personas, you know, in front of him. It's very cool. And I knew also that because Peter told me that his food styling was really, you know, no bullshit, really down to earth too, you know, no nonsense. So I was glad like to I learned a lot from him. I think like realism is certainly a way to go. Consider that 98% of food photographers do very much polished and kind of almost unreal, you know, surreal photographs.
Very, very much so. So I mean, you are more about that kind of in real time, you know, mise en scene.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Which I don't know if I'm gonna get like other jobs, but yeah. Even David Chang might change his mind, you know, before his next book. But no, it was like, I'm glad that I did it that way. Very like, yeah, realistic, you know.
Well, I think a lot more people are interested in the process rather than the final product, which leads me to asking Marcus, does a background in cooking, having spent years at Aquavit and other restaurants, help with photographing the process or knowing which processes to pull out and are the most aesthetic? And
Definitely. I love food, and it's, you know, it's part of my, that's all I do. I eat, work, and sleep. And, I love photographing food. And I work with, you know, when I do assignments like the late night eats, I don't have a food stylist. It's just me and my camera and my assistant. And, you know, that bite out of that sandwich, that's my bite. And, usually we like a sandwich like that. We get it, and we photographed it straight from the guys, and then I take a bite, take another picture, shoot another frame, take another bite, and then, you know, it becomes this process. And somewhere from the first picture to the when the plate's almost empty, there's always this moment where it happens.
So you're more about that deconstructive photo of the final plate, whereas I saw a lot of Momofuku, you know, in the kitchen doing prep work with David, even going out doing late night eats. So it was about the encompassing thing is David Chang.
Yeah, the thing with David is that when you get to know him, he's an amazing guy, and so it's hard to spend much time around him because he's so like fucking busy. It's like it's unbelievable. But when he's in town and his schedule is allows it. It was great to hang out with him, and he also like Marcus. He kind of like breathes and lives, and he has got like this amazing relationship with food. it's one of the best experiences I had in my life, culinary speaking, was one time at some bar. He had like the place was almost closed, and he asked me, are you angry? So I did something, and he cooked like something for me, like right up off the top of his mind, you know, like it wasn't even in the menu. He just started like picking stuff, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was fantastic. Yeah. So I felt like, oh my god, if I was like a young chef, I wouldn't battle David Chang right now.
Yeah, you know,
like, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, do you have a background in cooking?
No, but not professionally.
Yeah.
I can boast any titles or professionally, but I come from like many Southern Italians. We take food very seriously, seriously to the point that we almost don't talk to each other if we know you're picking the wrong kind of arugula, you know, for something, or you're doing
it's carbonara with
garlic. I might like stab you in the back, you know. So that doesn't give me like, I can't show off my skills like if I don't have the tomatoes of the highland I'm from. But I like food, yeah, for sure.
So yeah, so next time we're gonna tape this in Palermo and just see what kind of chops you got.
Yeah.
And then Marcus, having cooked at Aquavit, where else did you cook? What is, you know, the lineage of food in your family?
Well, I went to culinary school in Sweden, and then I cooked for about 8 years in Sweden. You know, started out as a prep cook and line cook, sous chef. And I moved here in 97, and at that time I wanted to do something different. I was pretty fed up with the whole lifestyle of working in a restaurant. And but I got this offer to work at Aquavit, and I thought, how can I turn down living in New York? For it was a year and a half, 18 months contract with Aquavit. So I took the opportunity, and that's how I ended up here. And you know, I gave that a chance, but I was still at the end of my contract. I gave up that cooking was it, professionally.
Transition into photography. What's funny though is that with that cooking background, a lot of your imagery, do you actually cook it or do you just eat it?
both. No, yeah. I never cook the food. I work with when I shoot in studios, I work with food stylists, and I have like Victoria Granoff is one of my favorites to work. We do most of my stuff is done with her. And we have the same philosophy about how food should look in front of the camera. And she's very much, instead of using brushes and tweezers and stuff like that, she's using her hands. And, you know, it's...
There's something tactile about your imagery. So.
Love that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she does most of my food. I work with a lot of other food styles too, but...
Yeah. So do you think food stylists are a very important part of food photography?
Or yeah, definitely. I mean... Yeah, I always put my fingers in the food and play around with it and in front of the camera. There's food stylists who don't let you touch the food, or like, you know, I can't work with people like that because I have a very opinionated of how I want the food to look and be presented. And it has to be a collaboration between the photographer and the food stylist.
Yeah, well, have there been situations where you've gone into a job and worked with a chef or a restaurant that just wasn't willing to compromise their vision for yours?
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
But that's what's good about freelancing. You don't work with that person again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally like when you, now that I actually you know, that I meet you and I see who you are, like this is the first time that I meet Marcus. Before I was just a fan of his photos.
Yeah. That's why I got both of you guys on the show.
No, seriously, I'm not like, you know, I'm not giving you a nice, you know, ice cream cone. It's just seriously. But I can see like why is photography so gorgeous, because like I think it's the perfect food photographer in a way, like because that's what you just said about like the fact that you are very opinionated and you also like that, you know, you have a tactile, how you say that? Yeah, I mean you're touchy, you know, you want to touch the food and kind of arrange it yourself after it's been already styled. That I think that kind of like it's a it's a perfect compliment for someone who does this job, you know, because you know where to put your hands. I wouldn't dare like touch anything like that. I would like probably slowly retreat to my bedroom if it doesn't.
Plus, then you get grease on the camera; it's hard to hold. Actually, we're going to use this as our break. We're going to go to commercial, and we're going to talk a little bit more about fondling food and other fun memories in kitchens and photography. This is Michael Harlan Terkel. You're listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Hey, this is Michael Harlan Terkel, and you're listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm here with Gabriel Stabile and Marcus Nilsson, and we're just chatting about fondling food and getting our hands all up in there. But actually, I wanted to talk a little bit more about getting out of your element or going and traveling and doing assignments in places that you don't know and with foods that you're unfamiliar with, and more specifically, your refugees hotel.
Yeah, this is a project that I started. It's about documenting the first night of refugees in America, which I think like it's a gorgeous idea, but it doesn't look that well most of the time. So I have a lot of like you know, rejects in my portfolio, but I started in school in 2007, and I myself was a little bit of a refugee because me and Paola, my wife, we moved together here in New York, and we got kicked out right away from the apartment we were renting. It was like a sublet, and we didn't know that you're not supposed to say to the co-op that you're subletting an apartment. So it was raining inside the place, so I called, you know, and this guy's like, "Who the fuck are you?" So, sorry, F-bomb.
But no, you're allowed to F-bomb. We're not FCC regulated. Yeah,
but I work with Dave Chang, so it's fine, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
So yeah, they kicked us out, and I don't know, I was displaced in the sense that I had my stuff all over town. I didn't know where to go. I was about to go back to Europe because I had run out of money. I was like really miserable, and I lost my deposit. It was really sad, and so like I ran into, when at the time I was still reading the New York Times, and I ran into this story about like these hotels where refugees spend their first night, and I got interested and I started shooting. And this story like took me to Miami, Los Angeles, Chicago. I've been a little bit all over the place, major cities in the States, to do that. And I think like it's a great story and needs to be told.
And from traveling and meeting all these different refugees from all these different countries, I'm kind of relating this back to food in a way that you're also getting this, you know, amazing dichotomy of different people and different cuisines. Was food ever a commonality, a common thing that you guys spoke about? Did it help you then go from something you were unfamiliar with, meeting all of them, even though you were familiar with the story, and then translate it back into the kitchen with David?
I think so. It got me certainly. Yeah, first of all, like most of them don't eat because most of them come from radical Muslim countries, so they don't eat like certain foods, or someone else might come from places where they don't eat peas, or where they don't eat, you know, this or that. And of course, like even if the officials that welcome them in the States are, you know, tend to be, you know, nice and trying to find the right food for everybody, sometimes it's just not possible. And so they it's nice to see like how they relate with the food, and actually like, although the story is not about food at all, but in the whole concept, but when I showed that portfolio at Gourmet, that portfolio gave me the first joke for Gourmet. Yeah. Because but they could only concentrate for some reason on the photos where the people are eating. You can see like, you know, all kinds of like emotions ranging from
It shows how much of a common language. I mean, we have Italy and we have Sweden representing, and like I said, you guys are shooting the same people. You guys are seeing the same food. I mean, it is such a common place. I mean, it's what brings a lot of people together. I wanted to talk to you, Marcus, a little about, you know, since you have that background in cooking, are there certain foods that you've shot, restaurant situations that you've gone into, and maybe it's produced a beautiful image, but it did not at all, you know, impress your palate? I mean, are you a complete food snob when it comes to shooting
assignments? No, not at all. I mean, I can eat the real dirty, greasy road food, some dive. I don't mind. I can eat. I just was photographing Thomas Keller yesterday or Sunday.
So yeah, which is like the antithesis of greasy.
So it was at Per Se.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. Love that food. But I appreciate the whole, you know, I can eat McDonald's.
Yes, and what are some of your favorite restaurants in New York?
Well, you know, I'm pretty boring when I eat out a lot. I work a lot and I don't have very much time to cook. And when I'm done with my work, I usually go to the same places, which is right around the corner from where I live or where I have my studio, which is Diner on Broadway. And I go to Walter's.
Yeah, not bad places to live around the corner.
I usually
from.
Just sit in the bar and I, you know, eat and drink in the bar. Very casual, but it's good food, simple food, but, you know, good smart cooks.
Yeah,
seasoning.
And are you at Momofuku 24/7 now? You're on contract.
Yeah, you're close to.
I live. Yeah, I live also around the corner, so it's pretty easy for me to go. And this is like one of the peaks of being like part of Momo family is that they treat you like family every time. So I don't go anymore that much because like I feel like embarrassed. And they just even if I order just a pork bun, they serve me the old menu, and it's like thank you, but
I
took on like 16 pounds from
exactly. You have to be able to maneuver around the kitchen to take some photographs. So.
No, but yeah, as far as like indeed, I think like living in New York is amazing. Because you can like end up like in the most obscure diner in the nether regions of the Bronx and you get like a crazy good sandwich and you feel like you're the luckiest.
Well, I mean, do you guys sit there and crave food from your heritage, food from growing up? I mean,
I do.
There's not many Swedish. I mean, there's plenty of Italian, but is there like true Palermo and is there cloudberries and
No, I don't really. You know, I miss the pickled herring every now and then.
Yeah, you got to actually in Brooklyn, Nordic Deli. Have you been out there in Bay Ridge?
No, pretty never solid. Never been. Yeah. I've been to IKEA.
Yeah.
That's
like four-star service.
You got to check that out. What's it called?
In Nordic Deli.
Nordic Deli, okay.
Yeah, out in Bay Ridge. I think they're the biggest distributors of Nordic delicacies in the States. Randomly found out about it through a friend who lives in Wisconsin, which has a huge Nordic community, and went there. And I don't have tons of places to, you know, pair it against. Russ and Daughters, I love some of their, pickled herring, but Nordic Deli kind of blew me away. And they're making everything from scratch, from Danishes every day to, you know, and Krumkacker, you know, have all their like holiday cookies and stuff.
So, yeah, I got to check that out.
Pretty solid.
Sweet. Yeah.
Excellent. And so future cookbooks, future assignments. What do you guys got coming up? You have Milk Bar.
Yeah, I'm doing this Milk Bar project, which is amazing because the...
How are you not going to gain weight from that one?
I mean, the milkmaids are... I mean, I just spent time in the kitchen with a group of amazing girls that cook. it sounds almost like an erotic fantasy, you know? it's just amazing. And they're nice. They're smart also, which I like a lot. Lots of them are college graduated, so it's kind of interesting to talk to them between cookies.
Yeah, I actually might go to Italy to do a job for... It's an advertising job though for Olive Oil Estate. I think it's your hoods somewhere.
We were discussing this it sounds like an amazing job.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping to do.
Because do you guys now find that your appetite starts to drive where you want your jobs or what kind of clients you're trying to garner?
I would love to do more in
I'd
Italy
love to, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Italian food and I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, it's great to hear it from someone who's a chef also, because like I feel like the emphasis between among educated foodies here in New York is much more like on French or Japanese traditions, and Italian is just I don't know, it's just misinterpreted most of the times, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you hit up old school Italian joints in Brooklyn? I mean, Fernando's is over 100 years old and is Sicilian food, and you know, the true muffalata is from there.
No, absolutely. Yeah. But my skepticism is not much respect, but it's still like Italian American for me, you know, in the sense that what I eat when I'm at home is very much like related to the ingredients you get and to the fact that you have them ready, you know, and don't have like they don't have to spend time at customs or being produced somewhere else. So that
so how equated are your, you know, food habits and, you know, philosophies about eating to how you shoot and what you shoot? I mean, are you localvores? And well, you're obviously not, since you're trying to get to Italy and how you shoot. Mm-hmm. But I mean, would you go ahead and shoot for a company like Kraft, or, you know, would you rather work with a chef like David Chang who sources, or would you rather be working with, you know, Aquavit, somebody that has cuisine dear to your heart?
Well, yeah, I do both.
Yeah.
I love shooting stuff like David Chang and, you know, all that diner foods and everything with more creative freedom and stuff. But the other stuff pays the bills.
Yeah.
Very well. So now, you know, I love doing that too. Bigger crews, bigger productions, which gets exciting too, like food advertising. I haven't done Kraft yet, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then on the more technical aspects, are there tips for food photographers outside of that of, you know, prime lenses and natural light? You know, should they be looking at something differently, knowing something about how to shoot food in situations?
Well, I think we both come from the same, like, my first job I ever did was for Gourmet magazine, like, and Richard Ferretti looked at my portfolio, and I didn't have very much food in my book at all. So I think, I don't know, I believe like you should shoot stuff that you, pictures you like, the way you want it to look, not thinking like, how do I get a job? Yeah. How do I make money?
It's funny because I'm the photo editor of both Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan, mm-hmm. and I get tons and tons of food portfolios of very commercial photographers, even ones that I tried to work with when I first moved to New York and said, no fucking way. They send me their portfolios trying to now work for us, but I don't hire on that. I hire on the idea of you have a true style. Mm-hmm. I can see the passion.
Exactly.
You also want to interact with the food and the subject itself, and not think of it as this like one-off autonomous entity of just like a freaking paycheck. Like, I'd rather someone shoot it and be involved in the community and the process and all that kind of stuff too. I mean, how important is it to be still associated with jobs that you guys shoot?
Yeah, I think if you're honest, you know, and as Mark said, you shoot photos you like, and, you know, these photos tend to look tend to look like mirrors of your personality, and I don't pay the bills. I'm starving, so I don't need to like work for Kraft or whatever.
Well, that's why you work with food, you know. Yeah. So you're at least not a starving artist. Yeah. You're just an artist.
No, only my wife starves. I'm well fed, but it's true that I think like if you don't, I despise a little bit like me too. I did the same. Like, I mean, it seems like I'm 10 years behind you in a way, because like my first job also was a gourmet, and Richard Ferretti saw my portfolio, and I didn't have much food on that portfolio. Yeah. But he saw something in it, and I guess like he translated it into food terms, and that was enough to generate an interest in me that before was just. But yeah, if you're not exploitative, I think, towards the subject, you know, you're not. You don't make pornography. You make realism. You know, that's what they say. So I'm not gonna exploit the subject, even if it's just a pork bun, because behind that pork bun there is so much integrity, so much work, so much, you know, sweat, and that you don't want to fuck it up. You know, you just want to be like faithful to what you follow.
You know, it's crazy. I've been shooting this Back to the House series about the lives of chefs and kitchens for almost 10 years now, and you know, I cooked the first half of it and photographed while I was cooking, and then somehow photographed my way out of the kitchen as a cook, but back into it as a photographer. And the biggest fear people have of letting me into their kitchens or any food photographer for that is that they don't want to show grease, they don't want to show dirt. Yeah. They, Department of Health, Department of Building, mm-hmm. like all these stupid legalities and logistics of running a restaurant sometimes get in the way of showing really what a restaurant is like. And
yeah.
I'm glad that you guys kind of have brought to the forefront, you know, a different real life, you know, tone to what food is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you. For
you
that.
Did. I'm just, I'm the rookie here. I mean, I just, no, I did. No, absolutely. Seriously.
Yeah, but I think it's becoming more. You know, definitely, it's more. Like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, everything was perfect. Napkins folded, backlit, soft focus. Food was perfectly garnished with an herb and stuff like that. And now I think everybody wants all. Everybody wants, even the bigger magazines that are kind of middle of the road, wants to be more loose and messy and kind of jump on that, being a little bit breadcrumbs,
yeah,
half eaten.
They want to show that people actually yeah. eat the shit that they show. So
which is, I think, also because that's why we are busy too, because it's, you know, becoming it's a trend.
Yeah.
in food photography.
Well, let's ride this trend.
Thank know. God. Yeah.
Hopefully it keeps on going. Well, I wanted to thank you guys for being on the show. Looking forward to seeing more work from Gabriel Stabile and Marcus Nilsson, and I am Michael Harlan Turkel. You're listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Networks, produced by Jack Inslee, engineered by Nat Wiener. Thank you again, and keep on shooting, keep on eating. This is The Food Scene.